Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the weekend, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, and this is episode 328 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week, we've got very special guest, an immensely popular guest. She's been on the show four times previously. Her name is Emma Louise Jay. She'll be known to many of you out there. She's been on talking about her blog, Conquered by Columbia, the book that she's been writing on, and indeed, she interviewed me some months back as well. So check out some of those older podcasts. Just look for Emma Louise Jay and you'll find her on the show, giving her articulate brand of quirky out there from rural Antioquia. And indeed, that's why we have her on the show this week. We're going to talk about the 80-something days of isolation that she really has spent, the quarantine in rural Antioquia, all alone. So we're going to talk about that, and we'll obviously have some humorous anecdotes and so on, but we'll touch on some more serious issues, you know, around the COVID-19 virus and how it's affected her little part of the world out there, as I would say, in the sticks. But where is it better to be? Is it better to be all alone on your lonesome in the countryside or back in the big city? So we'll talk to her about this and expect a humorous and enjoyable conversation. For those of you who've been tuning in, of course, I know you've enjoyed the three-part series on Crossing the Darien Gap with Nadia Drost. That was pretty exceptional, and the numbers have been amazing. And then last week, 327 with Rainbow Nelson, talking about how we can turn the clock back on tourism and make a better product to benefit so many more people is quite poignant as well. And hopefully we can work towards that, those of us who have interests in the tourism industry. If you want to help us continue and grow and survive, indeed, look up our Patreon page. That's patreon.com and then Columbia Calling. There are various ways that you can sponsor us and look out for us. And if not, just go to buymeacoffee.com and look up Columbia Calling. You can just sponsor us for the cost of a coffee. And I promise the money goes right back into the podcast. So anyway, without further ado, because Director of Columbia Reports, Adrian Alsema, is still too busy. There's too much going on in the country at the moment for him to be able to submit a new segment for us. So unfortunately, he won't be back for a few more weeks, hopefully sooner rather than later. I'm going to come back in the next segment of the show, and we'll be back with Emma Louise Jay on the line from rural Antioquia describing her isolation during this quarantine period. As always, stay safe, stay healthy, heed the warnings, and don't do anything stupid. Thank you again for listening. I'm Richard McCall, and this is Columbia Calling. And we're back. This is the final segment of the Columbia Calling podcast, episode number 328. And we're here with, well, a great friend to Columbia Calling, Emma Louise Jay. You'll remember her from episodes 275, where she interviewed me, and episode 242, Conquered by Columbia. Of course, her website is conqueredbycolumbia.com, and you can find her on Twitter at that one too. So she was last talking to us May 2019, and previous to that was September 2018. How times have changed since then. So welcome back, Emma.
Hello. Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. We're doing okay. But really, the reason I got you on is because you are the person I know who is in proper isolation. I mean, the time this episode goes out, you will have been in pretty much solitude for 80 days.
It's actually, I mean, you say 80 days, I honestly haven't got a clue anymore. Like, I genuinely have lost all track of time, day. Also, we're in the rainy season, probably in Bogota as well, I guess. Yes. And it's so dark here most of the time. And so it's really kind of eerie and strange. But yeah, like properly out in the sticks. That's how I would describe where I live. Because I live between two very small, very rural villages, El Retiro and La Ceja. Mm-hmm. And I live right in the middle of the two of them in the mountains. And even to go to like a few shops down the road, which are really just, you know, tiny little hamlet kind of shack, is a half an hour walk. So, yeah, like properly out in the sticks. But it was a real shock when the lockdown happened, because I think probably like you, when I moved to Latin America, like probably a lot of other expats, we came here kind of for a lifestyle where people are really friendly and you're out all the time and, you know, a sort of Latin way of being. And just overnight, it's like all of that disappeared. And we're all now just living in our hermitages, kind of not sure when or if it's ever going to end. And I feel privileged in that luckily I have a garden, for example, so I can go out, I can walk my dog, I can breathe, you know, relatively clean air and all these kind of things. But if I was living in a tiny flat on my own, I don't know how I'd be feeling right now, honestly. I think I really feel for people that are in that situation. I don't know. But yeah, it's been a really weird period.
I think about that. You're going, I mean, you walk or you drive, I suppose, up to the village shop. And I'm just getting the idea of the village shop with everything's behind the counter. And so you have to think about what you want. These proper Colombian village shops. So you have to sort of go, it's no browsing. It's like, I'll have 2 cans of tuna, you know, 10 pounds of flour and some matches, please. And they just sort of make them appear. Are these village shops?
It's okay. So I think it varies a bit throughout Colombia, but the mayor of El Retiro is kind of the one that decides to what extent we can go out here. I don't know to what extent that's countrywide or whatever, but for my intensive purposes, yeah, I have to follow what he says. So I am allowed to go out for a few hours on a Tuesday and only to buy essential groceries. And I go to a little independent supermarket and I queue on a chair outside the supermarket so that there are only 2 people in the supermarket at one time. It's absolutely so these little bar stools that you used to go to a little bar and have a aguardiente or a rum or something, now they're used for social distancing, Colombia style. So I sit on the chair. And I'm only allowed into the little supermarket with gloves on, with the what do you say, tapabocas? I can't remember how do you say that in English? Face mask. Face mask. And at first, I didn't have a face mask because I couldn't get one. Like, they were just completely out of stock where I live. Couldn't get one. I think at the beginning, I thought, oh, I don't need these things. I mean, this is ridiculous. But then, of course, suddenly I realized that we all now have to wear these things. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone else, you adapt. So I couldn't get one of these things. So all I could do to be allowed into the supermarket was to wear like a shawl from Pakistan. Cover my mouth, so I would be like this burqa wearing woman in the middle of rural Colombia doing my shopping, because otherwise they just wouldn't let you in the supermarket and they would check your cédula that you were allowed to shop that day, cross you off a list, you had to sign a document. And I just became really intense overnight, and like I was saying to you before, all of these sort of pleasantries that we were all used to in Colombia before, you know, or lurking Mars, or I don't know, what do you say in Bogota, Quetzal, I don't know, whatever you say there, it's just all gone, basically. quickly. Now it's because you can't really see what somebody's feeling under their face mask, not the same way you can without. So you sort of say, how are you? Yeah, I'm okay. And that's it. And that is the extent of any kind of conversation. And I think also because where I live, there aren't really any foreigners at all. And the few foreigners that I think there were, they kind of left when the lockdown happened. They took the humanitarian flights and they went. So initially, locals here, I think, thought that I was probably infected with the virus because there was a kind of rumor going around have this kind of thing, even though I hadn't left the country for a long time. So I kind of experienced that as well. Like people were very, very wary of me. Like they thought, oh, you know, she's probably got it, you know, because people in London and Spain are getting it. So that's all stopped now. I think, you know, that all stopped. But at the beginning, there was just so much misinformation and confusion and suspicion and just the whole atmosphere of the place changed literally in the space of a weekend. And since then, it's kind of settled down a little bit. But things are very strange. I mean, I'm sure they're still very strange where you are, as well.
Yeah. I mean, Bogota is strange. And of course, I'm in a pretty nice, leafy, well-heeled neighborhood where people tend to obey, you know, quite international. More, all the Colombians have traveled or travel and you know, they've picked up this, but we are therefore targeted by all of the people, let's say, vallenato artists, mariachis, we've had papayeras. The only one we're lacking is the reggaeton. And in, on a sad note, though, is like our regular avocado vendor Eduardo, he's been mugged twice by other avocado vendors.
Oh my goodness, that's horrendous.
It's just one of these things. It's just the desperation that's going on.
We
see it right in your faces. And I was just thinking when you were talking about though that we're all like burkered up now, and I think we are. Yes. You know, we're all like, I can't recognize anyone. I guess this is going to be a process. I get people saying hello to me and I just look blankly at them. So that, you know, I'm the grumpy gringo. But what amazes me is that I really remembered from this situation a quote. Now, this is weird. This is drawing from my childhood, but from a Roald Dahl book. And it was from Danny, the Champion of the World, when he talked about his father. And I guess they're working in the garage together. And he says, his father never smiled. He smiled with his eyes. And I've never forgotten that. And I'm like, can I smile with my eyes? Can I smile at people? And so I try, you know, to sort of produce crow's feet.
Me too.
It's a tough one.
I know what you mean. It's like you're trying. I mean, yesterday was my shopping day, and I mean, this is ridiculous now, isn't it? Like days, but you know, like for me, Tuesday is now shopping day. Like the concept of Tuesday doesn't it? You know, and then, but it's. I know exactly what you mean, and you're sort of trying to. I think also, I don't know if you ever experienced this, but because I'm foreign here, I experience a kind of pressure to be as friendly as possible.
Yes.
So I'm desperately trying to sort of convey, as you say, with my eyes, you know, a good day, hello, how are you, you know, because now you realize you can't, you know, you can't, people can't see you under really, you know, you just can't express yourself the way you could before. And I've been wearing glasses as well because my contact lenses have now run out and I can't get any more because I can't go to Medellin. So I find that the tapaboca thing, that when I get hot, which happens here a lot in the humidity, like my glasses kind of steam up with the from inside the car. So it's just a kind of steamy, humid, strange experience now. I mean people say, some people are saying it's like the apocalypse, aren't they? I don't know if that's overly dramatic or under dramatic. I don't know. It's just so surreal. Everything is surreal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I want to put apocalypse on it. I always think as, you know, apocalypse level events, I think it's a pretty, I mean, obviously it's a huge tragedy and the numbers of those, you know, the reported numbers of those infected now and all that. It's an absolute tragedy. I can't think about it. I can't try and end up, if I'm talking to someone over, you know, Skype or the telephone, they're always asking me after the UK. I say, I don't know. And it's just awful. And it's better to be here. And I'm always, like you say, so much more polite. I'm very aware that I'm a guest here. But now, as you say, being a foreigner, there's still the suspicion, even in Bogota, you know, you're a foreigner. You must be carrying it. And now I have a friend who's Vietnamese here. You can only imagine, because she's from Southeast Asia.
Oh, golly gosh.
She's seen as being, you know, patient one. She's really faced some dreadful situations. But I mean, you know, I try and take the positives, but you always can't push it away. You know, the fact is hundreds of thousands of people are dying. But if I take the positives, so, you know, I've got two children under this roof. I'm definitely bonding with them. Mm-hmm. We're definitely spending more time together.
Yeah.
Of course, this is burning my neurons, but at the same time, that is lovely. You know, that is lovely. But my life, because I work from home, hasn't changed overwhelmingly, but it has changed in that I'm homeschooling. And therefore, the time that I have...
And how is that? How you find
it? I don't want to be a teacher. I'm not going to... I was a teacher for a year. In Guatemala, but I was a teacher for a year, and I apparently was quite good at it. But I think it's different when it's your own kid, isn't it? And you know, I just sort of
hard. And when you're living with you as well.
I don't want to be that authoritarian figure at the table. I want to be, you know, obviously a figure of authority, but a figure of love and a figure of nurture, but not the teacher. You know, I want to be here as sort of additional when it comes to the educational situation. And they're sending so many classes. There are days where there are 8, 9, 10 classes.
It's too much, isn't it? It's a bit hardcore, really.
Yeah, I don't know. But enough about me. Enough about me. You're way out there, but you have neighbors sort of nearby. But I mean, it's still solitude.
It's what I would say is that. So where I live, to give you an idea, I'm kind of living in a bit of a bubble. In that, I live in an old farmhouse, which has been here since the 60s. And around me, there are a few other houses that are also old. None of us are in a parcelación. We all live without that. But because it's like a small kind of community, everybody knows each other. So if anybody remotely unknown by the dogs locally comes along, all the dogs sort of, you know, go out together from all the farms like a pack, you know, sort of sort the situation out. I think all the dogs are very confused. And between the farms, obviously lots of people are used to just on a normal, you know, before this happened, people would come and just show up at your kitchen window and have a coffee or have a chocolate. You know, it's a sort of uninvited, you know, come into your house and just take or panela or rice or, you know, without even asking you. I mean, I don't even lock my door, and I'm not exaggerating. I mean, that's how rural it is. You know, it's virtually impossible to get to the house, and you know, you probably wouldn't want to come either anyway. So it's like that. And now when this first happened, I think people kind of stopped that immediately. So people stopped having coffees with each other. People, you know, were quite strict about following the rules. But then of course, a few weeks ticked by and people started to get very lonely. And so I have a dog like you. So I don't really know what you do with Monty, but I walk my dog twice a day. So I would go and walk my dog, and then my neighbors would start inviting me to these kind of nighttime, you know, brandy and rum evenings, you know, on the deck. And the first time I didn't know how to handle the situation, because people here get offended so easily if you say no to anything. So I ended up on one end of the deck having a rum, you know, with a sort of 4 meter distance from me and the next, you know, we were all like this, you know, having these rums, and this was absolutely ridiculous. And that was when my neighbor gifted me one of these tapabocas, because I hadn't been able to get one, and his wife works with textiles, so she made me one.
Nice.
So it was very kind of her. So I think that's how most people actually have managed to acquire goods, because you can't get things in the shops. Shops have now run out of almost, you know, everything that you're used to getting. So, you know, people say, what do you need? Or, I think you need this. They help each other out. But then I think these sort of evening gatherings, people started being very lax about it and stopped wearing the tapabocas and everything. And so I stopped going to those kind of things. So I'm the kind of, you know, girl at school that, how would you put it? You know, the goody two shoes kind of, that isn't breaking the rules. Because, and I asked myself, well, why haven't I been breaking rules? Because in theory, there was only one case in El Retiro that was confirmed in the village. But the thing is, you know, I used to work in a hospital for many years as a psychologist. And I just don't want to put a strain on the health system that clearly wouldn't really be able to cope, you know, any more than it already is. And so I feel, I don't know, I've been a bit belligerent about kind of sticking by it, because I don't want to get ill. I don't want to give it to anyone else. And, you know, I think that there's a lot they obviously still don't understand about how this virus is transmitted and things like that. So I don't know. So things, the atmosphere where I live is now, you know, it's not tense, but I would say that people, you know, because sometimes people are building just to pass the day, and then other neighbours get annoyed that they're building, and, you know, so you've heard random fights. It's all been kicking off. Somebody's got their elderly grandmother staying with them that came from Medellin, and she's absolutely deaf as a, I don't know, what's a good metaphor for being deaf? Deaf as a, I don't know what we say, I've forgotten. And she just yells all day, Kevin Jessa! And, you know, I'm not joking, like, all day. And at first it was a bit annoying, but now it's just become surreal. I don't know, I've kind of got used to it now. It's just very, very, very peculiar. And so people have had arguments, but then they've resolved them, and then they help each other out. And so it's a bit like living in a very big family. And also, some people that live here, they invite their families. And so I think, you know, as to actually sticking by the rules, I would say that at this point, most people are not really sticking by the rules, at least where I live. Because I don't know, it's a society where people are used to just doing things with their family all the time, and they just can't adjust to this idea that if you're not living with that person, you can't really be in close proximity with them at the moment. And at first people were scared, but then because so few people here have been infected and nobody seems to know anybody that's been ill, I think people have become a bit complacent. So I think now is a bit dangerous, really, because I think obviously this virus is still around, but now I feel that complacency has replaced the initial fear.
Well, I think you're right on that one. I think, if I quickly say, when the deaf grandmother goes back to Medellin, you're going to miss her.
I'm going to be weeping. I'm going to weep all day.
But I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. If I, you know, I take the lift down. Well, as you say, I have Monty the dog, which has always given me special dispensation, even under the worst periods of time, to take him out for 20 minutes, three times a day, something like that, which is quite nice. At the beginning, it was eerie, and I would take photos of, you know, the emptiness. And I live, you know, in this financial center and so on. It was quite weird. But now there are more and more and more and more people out because they have to work. But when you talk about this complacency, this is what worries me the most, because, of course, we know that figures are only increasing. And you look at a place like, you know, the barrios, let's say, the invasiones, and the more poor segments of Bogota, where the pagadiarios downtown, where I used to spend a lot of time for my thesis, we're looking at 9 to 12 people in a room, you know, displaced people or just, you know, working people. And then you look at the coast, who in the Costa, the Caribbean coast, are just not accustomed to, being told what to do, I think is the best way of putting it. And then it was a couple of weeks ago, the police in Cartagena stopped something like 600 parties in Cartagena, and you're just like,
where?
But and then when you talk about the need to be with family, and I come from an incredibly small family, but I have married into a what is a huge family. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think of cousins and so on. But, you know, my sister-in-law and her husband live very close by. And when it was James's birthday, my first son, in April, in fact, he's the Bogotazo, April 9th. He had to celebrate sort of on another side of a window from them. They had came round to wish him well, and we sort of passed cake through the door.
Oh,
it was a bit sad, you know.
It's a bit sad, isn't it? It is sad, and also it's. I wanted to ask you about something that you just said with the photography, because you and I, we both, you know, take quite a lot of pictures and stuff, and. At first, where I live, there isn't really any, the only things I can take pictures of are the nature, and that's very nice. But initially, you know, because I follow Instagram, and I would look at pictures like yours of these very abandoned, you know, areas of Bogota, and it was just so sad, you know, to see all these, you know, empty benches and empty streets and, you know, desperate street vendors with absolutely no, clientela, no customers anymore. And it's just, I don't know, it got very sad. And I've noticed that as the weeks have gone on, most people are not really posting pictures like that anymore. And I think it's because everybody's just found it too sad. It's just, you know, there's only so much of that you can post, really.
You said it earlier on, you know, it all sort of changed over a weekend. And I think, you know, we all sort of, I don't know, took it as something strange. There's certain novelty value, not to use novelty in the most positive sense, but it was a novelty value to the sort of the 28 days later type thing, or, you know, apocalypse, as we say, you know, in the streets or any number of Hollywood films. And now it's been, you know, somewhere up to 80 days, and you know, this is growing tiring and repetitive.
I think you're right. You're quite right, because you're making me think of something else. I remember when initially it was going to be just the weekend, wasn't it, that we were locked down for, and then it became, you know, indefinite. And at the time, I remember going to the supermarket and panic buying, you know, because I thought, you know, I don't know when I'm going to be able to shop again. I knew that where I lived, supplies would run low pretty soon, you know, of certain things. So I remember just going to the supermarket and, you know, grabbing what I could and buying, you know, 3 packets of blood sausages or something, thinking, you know, that at least I can put these in the freezer. But it was a bit perversely exciting. Like, it was a bit like, oh, this is exciting. This is different. This has never happened before. Ooh, what's this? You know, but as you say, now we're, 80 days, did you say, in? Oh, and it's not exciting. It's not exciting it really anymore. It's now really quite concerning. And I do worry, you know, obviously we're all following like global events as much as we can. And you can see that now people are starting to get violent, and in Colombia there has been some violence, although probably not as much as I was expecting, actually. But I do wonder how much longer that will last, like how much longer they'll be able to keep a lid on, you know, all the different kinds of violence. Because people have just been locked up, shut up, you know, they don't have their Friday drinks to, you know, take the edge off things. They don't have any cash in their pockets to, you know, chill out at the weekend, you know, go to the cinema, whatever they like to do. And everybody's worried about money, and, you know, relationships have broken down, and, you know, all kinds of things have happened, and people are coping with that as best they can. And in some cases, you know, people are not coping with that at all anymore. And people are fed up, and, you know, lots of existing problems that have been simmering away in the world are now also, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost, as they say.
It's kind of, I don't know, that
concerns me a bit, that in Colombia things could get quite nasty. And, you know, I don't know what would happen if that, you know, if the security situation changes very suddenly, or how that could be managed. I I just don't know, because here there are lots of people that have lost jobs. I've got friends that have lost jobs, neighbors that have lost jobs, or their businesses have gone bust. But here people do try to help each other out, at least with groceries and things like that. So, you know, nobody here is hungry. That's the reality. You know, people, every day someone comes, you know, I can't get to the shops, I don't have any beans, you know, and you give them some beans, some rice, or whatever. You know, people really do help you. You know, nobody allows anybody else to starve here. But, you know, in other parts of the big cities where maybe that community spirit is a different vibe, you know, particularly, you know, I don't, you know, how much longer can it go on without things getting nasty?
But it's yeah, I mean, there's a lot in that one. Are you, though, let's say, personally afraid up there alone? I have to ask. I mean,
you're I'm not. And in fact, do you know what? I would say the opposite. I think to talk more about the sort of emotional side of this experience, if I may, it's initially, I think I was in a bit of a kind of coma, like, is this really happening? Like, this will only go on for a couple of weeks kind of thing. And then when it went on for more than a couple of weeks, then I went through what I would call the good day, bad day stage.
We've all been there.
Well, okay, that's interesting. So you've been there as well. So it's like some days I would feel fine, I would feel positive, I would feel creative, I would have a really productive, you know, day of working from home. You know, get on with the neighbors, you know, everything would be fine. And then the next day I would feel really depressed and not really for any particular reason, you know, because I do have people in my life. You know, I do feel emotionally connected with people, you know, I've got a partner, things like that. But it, like some days just out of nowhere, I would just feel sad, depressed, teary. And then the next day I'd be fine again. And it was a bit weird. And I think a few weeks ago I had a kind of meltdown because where I live, the cabling is extremely precarious. You know, it's just a few cables precariously woven around some sort of, you know, Tarzan style branches. And when our dear President Duque, don't we love him? When he decided that, you know, essential construction should resume, a truck came along past my house and destroyed all the cabling for me and a few of my neighbours.
Just drove through it, didn't it?
Drove through it quite without, you know, couldn't care less. And that was the third time my internet connection had gone down, I think, in those weeks. You know, somebody cut my cables one day because they thought they were ugly. Another day, I think a horse chewed through it, you know. So when this happened the third time and it was the truck, something snapped inside of me and I thought, I'm not having this anymore. And I went outside, I'm kind of ashamed to say, with my machete, because I was just furious. And I went outside and I just started yelling at these two men in this truck. And I said, you know, look what you've done. All of us here, you know, we rely on the internet to work. You know, that man over there, he works from home. You know, that person over there has a child. They're trying to educate their child from home, just like you are. You know, none of us can do anything without the internet. Or, you know, we maintain relationships with it. We use social media, you know, all kinds of things we need the internet for. So when my internet was cut afterwards, I reflected and I thought, why was I so upset about this? And I think it's because then I really did feel cut off. Yeah. You know, when there was no internet, it's like, oh my God, right now I can't even go on Twitter and have a rant for 5 minutes or, you know, publish a picture because, you know, and share that moment with someone. You know what I mean? So it's that I just lost it. And afterwards, all the neighbors started to see me differently. And it was almost like they thought, oh, this woman's actually, she's quite a strong woman. She's quite a strong woman. Perhaps we should be a little bit, you know, a bit more careful kind of thing. And afterwards, I kind of something inside me like toughened up that hadn't toughened up in all the time I've been here. I think all the time I've been in this country, as much as I've loved it, I've always had slight, you know, feeling of being a bit scared at certain times or in certain situations. And something happened to me that day where I thought, no, I'm not taking this anymore. And I need to stand up, you know, if I'm going to live here and in this kind of place, I need to stand up for myself and I need to be, yeah, a bit more, I don't know, is defensive the word? I'm not really sure what the word is, but
is it a resilience?
So yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's it. I like that word. Yeah, we'll go with that. Something else that started happening here was people would come along and try and dump rubbish in the local river. And there are lots of there are some peasant communities that live in the river for their for fish.
Yeah.
To eat, you know, at the moment they can't. A lot of them have lost their jobs, and they literally live off that fish. And I'd had enough. So again, I would be going down there at 6 p.m. and saying, you know, F off, excuse my language. You know, these people need this to eat. You know, who do you think you are? And so I don't feel afraid at the moment. At the moment, I'm more concerned for the general, the country's stability in general. Yeah. But actually, where I live, no, I don't feel scared, and I actually feel quite protected, and I feel protective of other people as well.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah. I love the idea of you, you know, your black makeup on, black nails, wielding a machete, with a shawl from Pakistan.
Yes.
Screaming, you know, Paisa accent, but with cut glass English. So it's like as people say, the Downton Abbey, but with a machete, wielding it at two men, truck drivers in the road.
I normally would have even felt that I could talk to, you know, people in that sort of situation. But it's like I say, I'd snapped. I'd reached a kind of tipping point of, right, I've had enough now. And I don't know, perhaps other people can relate to that, that are listening to this. But it's like, I think lots of people have had their day where it was like, right, this is enough. And sometimes it's not even something major, is it, on reflection? But for me, it felt major, because I knew that me and my neighbors were, you know, we're all depending on the internet as our only way of feeling connected with the world, and trying to earn any kind of living as well. So it's, you know, really, really, really challenging. I have to say that the Une boys, I don't know, you know, the guys that work for the internet company, they kept coming, they kept repairing it. They were, you know, they were real troopers. I mean, for me, they've been total saviors, the people that work in telecoms. I mean, I don't know what I would have done, you know, if I hadn't had internet, if this had been a different, 100 years ago or something, and this was happening, then I don't know how I would be feeling. I think then I would have really, really struggled.
Yeah, definitely. The ups and downs were, I went through a phase. It was definitely up and down, definitely. And I think I saw your ups and downs on Twitter, and I'm probably you saw mine.
I don't know. Probably, no, I think you're far better at sort of, you know, more diplomatic, shall I say?
Well, I try, but sometimes it's like I have been told off for calling the president a wave on Twitter before. So
good for you.
But then I like yours. You've got a sort of like it's almost like British TV. You've got like the 9 p.m. watershed for your political rants.
Yeah.
And then you go into it. And I'm always make sure I'm there for those, because, you know, it's sort of like we've forgotten what days they are. You've got your shopping day. I remember the day I ate meat or the day it rained. Now it's all the days. But, you know, there's certain things. What I've done to survive, partly though, being a bit more serious, is I've just basically, I don't watch the news. I don't watch.
Me either. I got to that stage. I completely adopt that strategy as well. Yeah,
it's not that I'm missing what's going on, because I read it all, you know, from all sorts of media, and obviously via the internet. If I didn't have it, I wouldn't read it. But I don't watch it, because watching it inflames me. It drives up my anger and my stress levels, especially when I see, you know, the guy in charge up north and the guy in charge in our home country and the guy in charge elsewhere. I just don't even want to mention them. They're those who are not to be named, and I just get furious. And so I read at the end of the day, and it's just like, oh, all right, you know. And as you say, you sort of, you know, when you sort of say, you stress out about this, you're going up and down. You know, my businesses are gone. We will hopefully rebuild, but I've just
dormant. Let's say
that's
dormant.
Very nice. I like that, because then we've got the idea of a volcano that they can explode once again.
Dormant
for now. Very nice. But you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to fret anymore. There's nothing I can do. No. I'm looking after my staff. I'm still paying into their pensions, their wages. And
well, I think healthcare. That's amazing, if you don't mind me saying. I think it's amazing that you've managed to do that.
It's been a stretch. It's been a stretch. But these people are incredibly humble. And they've been with me for a long time. And they're like family. They are family, yeah. Really. And you know, if I ask anything of them, they'll do it. And I hope that this is showing my not only dependence, but my trust in them as well. And it's hard, though. I'm not going to lie.
How do you feel being separated from Mompos? Because obviously you do live in Bogota, but you also have a kind of second home in Mompos, and you go there with children. Yeah. And how does it feel like not being able to go to Mompos and sort of, you know, see how things are there?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be there, because we'd be in big houses, big colonial houses, where we could be under quarantine, but we'd be in the inside outside, because they're colonial houses with the cloister in the middle and swimming pool and we'd have aunts and uncles and great aunts and great uncles and cousins, and they would just sweep the children away and do stuff. And some of them are teachers and they could take over. They would love it. You know, it's like, I don't even know how much family's there. We thought about it, and we actually applied for permission to leave Bogota, and it was granted because on a business sort of, let's say, visa to leave Bogota.
They granted special dispensation.
Yeah, because we just said we have to get up to see our businesses and stuff. And then I just said, I don't want us to go. I am very worried about what's going to happen up in the Caribbean coast, because you and I, and I'm speaking to my wife, Albert, we both know how people behave. And we know how it's, I mean, Mompos is basically, they've blocked the roads in and out, but there's still provisions arriving, and there's still flow between the farms, and there's still cattle moving. And you're just like, that means there's still cowboys moving around. There's still river traffic.
And of course, I can tell you that in these more rural communities, you know, policing the lockdown is impossible.
It's
the word. It's impossible.
Yeah. So we thought long and hard about it. And I thought, you know, first of all, if I get sick, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if my wife gets sick, that's a totally other situation. And if either of my boys get sick, and they're 5 and 5 months, I mean, you know.
Golly, no.
You know, there's a new hospital in Mompos, and it's level 2 or level 3 or whatever that means. Mm. So it's okay.
Exactly,
But it's negligible, really, what would happen in a hospital in rural Colombia. No. And then there is a possibility, and I don't want to, you know, sort of foresee events or anything. But if things get really bad, then provisions won't arrive.
Exactly.
And there won't be food.
Yeah. Yes. I think this is what like when I was telling you about my sausages earlier I stocked up on morcilla and because I knew I thought at the moment we have food, but how long is that going to continue for? And I don't know what it's like in Bogota, but where I live now, you can get most vegetables, although you know, things like broccoli, you know, basic things like broccoli. I haven't had a broccoli since February, you know. Mm. I just get what I can on a Tuesday. But things like meat and things like that are rationed. I can only have one portion of meat, one portion of fish, and people can only have one little thing of eggs. But where I live, I actually have, you know, we have chickens, so we don't have to worry about that. But it's so things like that, so it's already rationed, and you realize that, as you say, if the situation got more complicated, let's put it that way, how long will that even continue for? I don't know, like, that is a bit of a concern.
First, you know, the food security side of things, but at the same time, you panic bought blood sausages, not toilet paper.
Yeah.
I like that.
I didn't panic. Do you know what? I mean, this is going to sound awful, but do you know what? The toilet paper thing didn't even occur to me. My mother was emailing me saying, Emma, you must, you know, stuck up on toilet paper. Why? You know, and I would say to her, well, if the worst comes to worst, you know, I've got old newspapers, yeah. I've got leaves, I've got, let's not get too graphic about this, but, you know, it's like it really wasn't high on my priority list, whereas having some protein in the house for me was, yeah, far more of a priority, because I, you know, we just don't know, do we? I mean, I've actually been extremely impressed by the way where I live they handled the food situation, because at first it seemed, you know, crazy to be rationing things. You know, in the past I would just go to the supermarket when I needed something every couple of days. So to suddenly be told, you know, you can have one pack of contramullos or whatever they're called, of chicken, you know, seemed ridiculous. But in reality, it's meant that all of us have, you know, have been able to get by if we've been able to afford to buy the shopping. Of course, if you can't afford to go to the shops, then I really don't know what you do. You know, it's like all of us here sharing things out and helping people that you know, aren't in a financial position to buy things. And there have been little truck deliveries to some of the people that are considered to be more vulnerable, of they get like a plastic bag, yeah. And in the plastic bag there's some washing powder, some panela, some rice and beans. But I went up to my neighbor the other day who had one of these things, and I said, do you mind me asking what you get, because I was just interested, mm-hmm. You know, what does she get? And she said, I get this, and I get it one, you know, one person going for 2 weeks, let alone a family of four or six, you know. So really, really tough situation. But I think, you know, given that the state here is extremely precarious, to put it mildly, I don't know how they could have handled it better on a local level.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there's a, you know, obvious benefit to you being in Antioquia. I mean, people seem to be...
Maybe.
It seems to reflect as well in the healthcare issues going on and so on. Well, at least what I read, I don't know. But I think we could talk forever. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time, but I'd like to ask you at the end here, has this been cathartic for you to talk about some of this stuff?
Yes, I think it has. And it's certainly been, well, it's been cathartic just talking with you also, you know, on social media and, you know, all of us, you know, sending little emails and stuff. And I think all of us that are, you know, particularly expats in this situation that have chosen to stay in Colombia for this, you know, we didn't choose to get out. You know, I think we've all been helping each other, and I've really appreciated everybody's help. And, you know, I've even made new friends actually during this time, you know, with people. And I've just as it's been a difficult time, you do realize how many people are there to try and help you, and how everybody does try to rally around each other here when there's a difficult situation. The other thing I would say is, now, like you, I've entered into a kind of more zen, I don't know how long it'll last, it might only last a day, but I've entered into a more kind of, as you say, we can't do anything, all we can do is, you know, we can't control what's going on anywhere else in the world, all we can try and do is, you know, stay healthy, you know, try and look after each other, and hope that it's all over soon and everyone's businesses, you know, can find a way out of this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for sharing. You know, it's been fun. It's also been, you know, sombering, and we think about the situation, extraordinary times in which we are living. And of course, you know, I hope you've been writing in this period.
I've been doing lots of writing. I've found photography really helpful, actually. Like, I always used to take pictures of villages, as you know, but now, because I can't go anywhere, I've just been taking pictures of nature, and actually I have found that helpful. But I also wanted to say to everybody, like, you must go and visit Richard's hotels when
thank you.
When all this is over, you know. I think all of us were going to be desperate to get out, and you know, we all need to support businesses like that. And you know, I think it'll be a healing experience when we can all go out again and see other parts of the country eventually.
Yes, please come and visit everywhere, and small family-run businesses those of us who are. Anyway, but listen, Emma Louise Jay, thank you so much for your time and your thoughts, and of course, articulate and sharing really what you're living through and how you're feeling. And I ask, please stay safe, stay healthy. Don't chase too many people with machetes. It, you know, you might get the wrong reputation.
I really don't want to condone or violence of any kind.
I think it's brilliant that you ran out with a machete. please tell me that your hair was in curlers too, you know. So.
Do you know what? My hair was wet, actually. My hair was wet.
so you basically looked like you sort of ran out of a swamp with a machete.
literally like that.
Fantastic. Well, listen up, everyone. Take a look at Emma's website. That's conqueredbycolombian.com. And, of course, it's in Spanish as well. Great friend to the podcast and to me, and we chat back and forth. One day, maybe 2020, maybe 2021, we'll meet in person.
We will. That will be raise a glass.
One or two, I think. Anyway, so thank you again so much for this and your third appearance. And take care. And yes, everyone, stay safe out there. Heed the warnings. You have to look after yourself and your loved ones. And well, we're all in this together. So thank you again. This has been episode 328 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I've been Richard McCall talking to Emma Louise Jay of conqueredbycolombia.com. Please tune in next week. We'll have author Julian Pacheco, author of the new book that's just out, The Anthill, which is about Medellin's Comunas. And so I'm actually halfway through it. So it's actually really, really good. So thank you again for listening. Bye-bye.